Hanselminutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 72, recorded Thursday, July 5th, 2007. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by Slash N Software Red Carpet Subscriptions, the most comprehensive solution for adding connectivity to your .NET and ASP.NET applications, with components for every major internet protocol. Online at www.nsoftware.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl discuss ways to become a better developer.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes from HanselMinutes.com. Scott is here. I am here. All is right with the world. Hi, Scott.
How are you, sir?
I'm well. What's up today?
What are you going to do over the next 6 months to be a better developer? This is the question that has been posed.
I'm going to listen to Hansel Minutes every day that I possibly can.
I think that'll just make you a huge geek. This guy named Justice Gray blogged about that he's going to read a developer book every week for the next 27 weeks. And he listed all the books he's going to read with a couple of slots open for people to suggest.
Is he ever going to write code?
I don't know. But he asks, after listing all of these books that he's going to read, he says, you know, the trick is if you want to accomplish a goal, you write it down, which of course we've talked about before and he's talked about before. But most importantly is share it with other people, right?
Right.
You can't just decide to quit smoking and then, you know, tell no one. So what he's doing is he's saying, I'm going to be a better developer, and he's blogged about it. So that's his share it with someone else. And then my buddy in Canada, Bill Simser, has posted being a better developer in 6 months. And this is kind of a blog meme. It spreads around because you're usually asked to tag people, you know.
Tag people? Like yeah. Tag you're it kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. So the way that you get these things to spread is you say, you know, here are five movies I want to see, and here's five people, and I want to hear about their five movies. It's the classic pyramid scheme. In this case here, though, he's saying, here's what I'm going to do to be a better developer for the next 6 months. And in the tagging, he's tagged myself and a couple of other folks like Ayendi Rahim and Jeremy Miller, Jeremy Palermo, Rocky Laka. And I'm sure that this will spread all over the place. So by the time that this episode of Hansel Minutes has come out, everyone on the internet has posted what they're going to do for the next 6 months.
Ah, very good.
But I thought it was a pretty darn good question, and it got me thinking about that kind of stuff. You know, we've discussed Ruby before and how this year Ruby was the language that that I was going to try to teach myself in order to be a better developer. And it seems that if you want to be a better developer, the first step is making the decision, like accepting the problem. What are the 12 steps?
Yeah, that's right. The 12 steps to being a better developer.
Yeah. First one is accepting you have a problem, right? You know, I'm not nearly the developer that I think I am, that I would want to be, right?
My name is Carl Franklin and I suck as a developer.
Hi, Carl. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like that. But Bill has a very good outline here, and he talks about reading is one, right? So it's reading books, and people are always emailing me and asking about what books right. They should read to become a better developer. And I think that's a part of it. But for me, it's less about reading books about development. I'm realizing it. This is just for me. Everyone has their different learning style. For me, it's about reading other people's code, because I really feel like if you want to be a good writer – like say you're writing novels or fiction, I think the way to be a good writer is to read as much as you can.
Yeah,
exactly. So I'm finding that I become a better developer when I read more of other people's code.
I am totally in agreement with you, 100%.
Really?
Yes. In fact, I learned a lot in my earliest days of teaching myself programming just by reading other people's code. Good code.
Not other people's bad code.
Not other people's bad code. You learn the bad habits from that. Yeah.
Well, so I think that the trick is finding good code to read, right?
Sure.
Now, certainly, in one's reading, they can read good code and bad code, just as you can read good fiction and bad fiction. But, you know, if you really want to be a great writer of fiction, you're going to want to read as many good books as possible. So I needed to find a pile of really good code. So then what is good code, right? Is it beautiful code? Is it successful code? Is it code with a lot of coverage? And then I figure that code that is good is code that is used, right? Code that a lot of people are using, code that is in a successful project.
Code that runs.
Yeah, code that runs. And this is not necessarily academically beautiful code, but it is code that is successful because people use it.
Right.
So, you know, maybe the folks that are on the projects like, you know, RSS Bandit or DOS Blog or Subtext don't think their code is very beautiful. As someone who works on DOS Blog, I can assure you that when you have looked into the code base of DOS Blog, you have looked into the face of evil. But it works, and it works for us, and we enjoy it, and we have a good time, and we do some neat stuff, and then we sell our souls, and then we do some neat stuff, and we sell our souls. So one of the things that I'm going to do to make myself a better developer is spend some time reading, not just using, but reading some of the code that I think is pretty slick. I'm going to spend some time looking at the Castle project. We talked a little bit about Monorail.
Right.
When we talked to the guys up at Illusion Software in Seattle there. I've decided that during the next six months, I'm going to spend some time looking at the whole Castle project stack. That means Monorail. That means the inversion of control container. And I think we're going to do a show in the next week or two on inversion of control and dependency injection. I think it's an important topic we haven't covered yet. The Windsor container. Also the dependency injection object builder stuff that came in the enterprise library.
Right.
I'm going to read this code. I'm going to try to understand what's going on. Not just skim it, but really try to, you know, grok it, try to drink it in.
Yeah.
I think the enterprise library, the stuff that Microsoft Patterns and Practices released, sometimes that gets a bad rap. It's a different kind of code, right? I mean, it's still good, but it has a different feel, just like different writers in a fiction have a different vibe.
Well, and also there's so much code there and so many different categories that you really can't consider it all as one piece.
Yeah, definitely. And you can, if you know the guys on the team, you can tell who was in where as they try to keep things looking the same.
Right.
You know, I think I learned a lot from taking a look at the code within Reflector of the base class framework, you know, looking at .NET and kind of, you're not necessarily reading the code because you're looking at it decompiled, but you're gleaning the programmer's intent by looking at, what Reflector thinks, you know, they meant. And that can help in design of frameworks, but I want to sit down and I want to look at Subtext, you know, Phil Hack's team stuff. Very well thought of. And I think, there's a lot of stuff that the DOS Blog team can learn from Subtext. And I want to check that out. Where would you think would be a good place to find a lot of good code to read, Carl?
I mean, you mentioned them. The Enterprise Library is a great place to start. The anything that's a public domain kind of open source project is also a great thing, because what's good about that is you get many eyes looking at and revising code. You know, and stuff that's open source tends to be a little more. Well, you know, I won't say polished, but the guys who are writing that, the guys and gals who are writing that stuff, they know that the eyes are looking at it. So it tends to be more commented, and it tends to be thought out a little bit more than just stuff that's slapped together that you could coerce a developer into sharing with you something that wasn't meant for public view.
That's an interesting perspective. I would partially agree. I would say that when you're writing a framework that people are using, like if you're writing on the Castle project or you're writing Patterns and Practices, if you're writing code that is definitely going to be reused by other folks as code, I think you're right. You spend a lot more time making it clean. I think if you're writing an app, like an RSS reader, maybe, that you'd be more willing to go nuts because it's the end user who wants the experience and beauty is a secondary goal.
You know, another thing to do is to take a look at your third-party tools and at some of the samples that come with those tools.
Yeah.
Those are usually done with an eye towards, you know, we want to do something that's happening in the mainstream, and we need to show the right way to do it.
Yeah, definitely. So I think reading is a big part of this. I'm also going to be reading a book called? It's something, it's F#. Hang on a second. Is it practical? You know, it seems like every book these days is either practical, pragmatic, professional, powerful.
Do you want to say that again?
No, hang on, because this is a good thing to keep in here, because I can never remember. Is it the professional one, the practical one, or the pragmatic one that is the book I want to read? Let me check my bag here.
Something that starts with P.
I'm pulling this out of my bag. It is Foundations. Ah, Foundations of F Sharp. Reading this book by Robert Pickering. It's an A Press book. These are the yellow books.
Okay.
F Sharp is a functional programming language, kind of based on like ML, but it lets you use the .NET framework, and it has a performance kind of profile like C Sharp. So it's really fast, but it's got functional programming perspective. It's got imperative programming perspectives. It's got object oriented. And I got into this because I had put up a list of books on my blog that was called like top language agnostic programming books to read. And one of the guys in the comments called me on it, and he said, "This is not language agnostic. You've described a bunch of object-oriented books." He said, "What about the functional programming paradigms? You know, there's a lot more out there than just if-then-else." And it got me thinking, and then I saw this book on F-sharp, and I said, "Well, it's got the little sharp sign in it. Then it must be good." Right? It's F sharp. So it must, you know, D, E, F. It must be 2-3 times better than C sharp.
I like the key of F sharp.
Exactly. You know,
especially F sharp minor, quite brooding of a key.
Well, sometimes it's difficult for me, at least when you do, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say drink the Microsoft Kool-Aid, but sip it at least to go kind of totally the opposite direction and go download something like Haskell or Hugs and start to do that kind of work, because in the back of your mind, you're thinking, well, how am I going to use this in the real world?
Right.
I think this is just for me at least, perhaps. But if I'm going to be a better developer, yes, I would like to be more well-rounded. But at the same time, I need to make use of the things that I do on the side in the real world, right? So doing Ruby on Rails on the side, I still feel like I can use that in the real world. Learning Haskell or Squeak, you know, at this point is...
Squeak? Did you say Squeak?
Yeah, Squeak. We'll do a show on Squeak.
What's Squeak? Just like, tell me what it is.
It's a small talk environment. Google
okay.
for... Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Yes, and how is that useful?
Yeah.
No, Squeak is a graphical environment. It's an open source, Smalltalk 80 language that was written in Smalltalk. And if you go to squeak.org, you can check it out.
You say it's graphical, so you can program with...
Yeah, it's for kids.
Oh, it's for kids.
Well, I wouldn't say it's for kids, but it's like an operating system, but it's an environment.
Interesting.
And your kids might like it. Now, of course, I'm going to get in trouble for saying it's for kids, but it's a virtual machine. It's got a lot of music and multimedia things. It's used for educational platforms. It's a powerful thing. We'll talk about it.
I will check that out.
It's not something that I would necessarily use every day at work.
Okay.
But I want to be a better programmer. So how do I balance that and using my time, you know, appropriately? So then I saw F sharp and I said, okay, well, it's totally weird. It's totally out there. It's totally not mainstream, but it's a Microsoft research project. It's supported. I can use it in Visual Studio. You know, it's funky enough to help me spread the wings a little bit, stretch outside of my comfort zone, but it's .NET, so I can use it today. So this was kind of a first step for me to go kind of way out there and learn something completely different.
Right.
So F sharp was a good compromise. So learning to write F sharp is going to be a part of that. And the Foundations of F sharp book, I'm about halfway through it, and I'm actually enjoying it very much.
Cool.
Now, speaking, you know, you and I have done a lot of speaking on the road and that kind of stuff. Do you think that that's a thing that one could do to be a better developer? Bill said this on his blog, that he thought that was a useful thing.
I'm not so sure. I think there are better uses of your time if you're trying to be a better developer than speaking. I would say that, you know, all of these experiences help your well-roundedness, but, you know, speaking is typically where you find several topics and you go out and you hammer them over and over and over and over again. There's a lot of repetition. And you don't always get feedback, you know. This was right on. This was not so right on. You don't always get so you may have these situations where you go out and you say something that somebody could take the opposite position on, but you don't know that because it's one sided. It's not a discussion. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So I would tend to think that a discussion would be more beneficial than speaking, because you don't get the feedback.
I think that speaking, sometimes people want to speak at a local users group. I think those things are great. Speak at a conference, and I encourage people who want to do that to do that.
Pub clubs. You know, exactly. Those
pub
things
clubs,
where you get together.
Nerd dinners. I find that setting up a study group at your company is a really useful thing.
Yeah.
We started doing work with TypeMock, you know, after the mock objects framework. And we tried to select a mocking objects framework for us to use here at Carillion. So the way that we did that is we had a mocking objects study group. You know, meet a couple times a week at lunch.
And speaking of meeting at lunch, we found that a lot of people are doing this with DNR TV. They're watching one day a week. They get their developers together around a projector. They have lunch and they watch an hour-long conversation, presentation, demo, whatever DNR TV is, whatever you want to call it. And then after that, they spend another half an hour discussing it. That's a popular thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's a good example. So I think that rather than speaking, I would say hosting discussions.
Yes.
You know, talking to people. Literally go to lunch with somebody. One of the things that we've also been thinking about doing, we've done a little bit here, but we haven't actually formalized it with with HR and the bosses, is taking a bunch of our devs, a bunch of our developers out to have lunch with other developers at another company that's not in a competitive situation. So it's almost like a sister city kind
right,
of a thing.
Right.
So find a company locally that's not in your space. Like, you know, you do banking, they do insurance.
Right.
Get them this, you know, you can all sign NDAs all day long, but sit down and compare notes. I'll go to lunch with darn near anybody. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
If you buy me a sandwich, I'll talk to you for as long as it takes me to eat that sandwich. last week, I had lunch at Panic.com. Panic is a constant award-winning Macintosh developer shop.
I was going to say, how did you have lunch at a website?
I had lunch at the website.
At the store of the website.
Well, I went to college with Stephen Frank, one of the founders of Panic. And they won an Apple Design Award again this year. They win them year after year. And I went down and saw their offices down here in downtown Portland and had lunch with my buddy Steven, who I went to college with and haven't seen in a while. And I said, well, you've got to come on the show and talk about, you know, Mac, because some of us just don't get it.
Right.
It'd be really interesting. So we'll have him on the show at some point in the next couple of weeks. And that kind of stuff, having lunch with people outside of your comfort zone, I find to be a really useful way to become a better developer.
So how many Mac developers does it take to copy a file?
I don't know. How many?
What's a file?
Okay. How many developers does it take to copy a file on Vista?
I don't think you can actually. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know either. It's still calculating. Call me in an hour. I'll tell you how long it'll take.
Oh, too much fun.
I just made that one up. Anyway.
There's your fluff seconds for the day.
Yeah.
So what were we talking about? How to be a better developer.
Yeah, going out to lunch with people that are maybe outside of your comfort zone, working on things that you're not working on, understanding how they do their build servers, understanding how they do their continuous integration. Do they do code coverage? How much code coverage? Talking to them about their software development lifecycle. Do they do Agile? Do they do RUP?
Right.
Do they do Scrum or Fall? Who knows?
And we don't have to tell you that if you're in a situation where you don't have developers to bounce ideas off of readily available, that listening to podcasts is another good way to be a better developer.
Yeah,
we hear it all the time.
It's about being a part of the conversation. You know, and you brought up a really good point. What about the single person shop? What about the guy who's listening to this, who's not driving to work because he just has to go downstairs, put his slippers on, and now he's at work?
Right. And he's the only developer within 100 square miles.
Well, I don't know about that. I guess that's Mike Gunderloy would be the only guy who's living in a farm with 100 acres outside of southern
I know quite a few of
Washington.
Them.
Yeah. How do those guys get involved? They got to join the conversation. I think if you can go to a nerd dinner or a pub club, you got to do it. You got to get out there. I think that if I were working on my own as a single person developer, as a one-man team, or as a remote team, the being a part of the conversation is so much more important.
Yeah.
If you can't stand up and walk over to someone's cube, you should have a lot of people on your IM list. You should have people on Skype. You should go down and sit at Starbucks. Find out where the other developers are.
Is there any such thing as a developer chat room these days? I mean, I know that there are webcasts and things like that, but...
Well, there is the IRC. Interestingly, Internet Relay Chat, IRC, seems to be coming back.
Really?
Some people who are on it might say it never left. But more and more, I'm seeing open source projects that have a room dedicated to their project.
Interesting.
So you'll see people who are enthusiasts about Ruby who will say, "Yeah, come visit us on the Ruby room or the Rails room on IRC," and they'll just keep that window open all the time, just kind of watching for questions, for noobs, for people who need help, and that is their virtual chat room.
Interesting.
Here in Portland, we've got a thing called Cube Space, which is kind of neat. It's actually a rent a cubicle.
Huh.
So it's a big giant open area with cubicles and internet connectivity and phones and faxes, and it's basically a drop in and buy an office for a day.
Wow.
And independents can do that to have a little bit more formal of an experience than Starbucks, but still be able to kick ideas around and talk to other people.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think being part of the conversation is important. That's all about community. So we've got reading as much code as you can, reading books that you think, you know, don't force yourself to read a book if you don't think it's going to.
I would agree. I think you run the risk of becoming too academic. You really got to stay in code as much as you can, you know.
Yeah, I really like books that have a lot of code samples. I definitely agree with that.
Right.
You know, as much as I wish I were a person who could read like design patterns and truly like love it and love every minute of it, I got to see the code. I think yes. Writing is good, you know, getting it out there. But writing is part of being in the conversation.
Oh, gee, you know, we never said teaching.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Teaching is a great way to be a developer. I mean, talking is one – speaking to, you know, doing a presentation is one thing. But actually, teaching a class is a great way to sort of force yourself to learn something that you might not know.
Right. You'll never be a better data grid expert than if you – teach it for 8 hours a day.
In a small class.
Yeah. Another way, of course, is to get an intern. This might be a funny way to say, how could I be a better developer? Find an intern.
Huh.
I've got two high school interns. Go to your local high school, go to your local community college, and bring in an intern. Maybe you pay them a stipend. Maybe you pay them an hourly fee. But this is going to be a fresh kind of open mind who's going to drop into your developer environment. You're going to find out what works, what doesn't. They're going to see the real world, but it's also going to expose aspects of your process that maybe don't work.
Sure, because you get to see things through their fresh eyes.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're going to ask questions that are wide open and like, wow, I never thought about that. That does suck. I don't know why we do it that way. So yeah, get an intern because that involves all of these things. It involves community. It involves reading code, their code, which may not be good, but it's reading code. Helping them write, teach.
Yeah.
That's a good all-around way. So I think everyone should run out and get an intern.
Awesome. Well, you know, we're just about out of time here. You got any last-minute things?
No.
On that list?
I think we covered it. That sounds like reading, writing, speaking, community, get an intern.
Listen to podcasts. But you knew that already.
Get on IRC. Get on chat. I'm more of a chat guy than an IRC guy. But yeah. Talk.
Talk and listen.
Yep.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot. And we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.